Happy Saturday, theater friends. As promised, here is a special interview that I recently did with Tony nominee Bryce Pinkham. We did this interview just before Christmas. It's intended to promote the PBS series Mercy Street, which Bryce is joining the cast of for season 2. Even though it does focus on Mercy Street, we do talk quite a bit about his theater past and about his current show, Holiday Inn, which, as you know, is doing a live stream for Broadway HD tonight. So if you haven't already gotten your pass to watch the live stream of Holiday Inn from Roundabout Studio 54, go over to BroadwayHD.com. It will start at 8 p.m. And if you can't do it tonight, rumor is, if tradition remains, you'll be able to watch it for a week or so after the live stream. Also, season 2 of Mercy Street will premiere on local PBS stations on January 22nd at 8, 7 Central, but as always, make sure to check your local listings. If you're unfamiliar with Mercy Street, it is set during the Civil War in Alexandria, Virginia. It is part military, part medical drama, and it stars a treasure trove of theatrical talent, which Bryce and I talk about. In the first season, you had 2-time Tony winner Norbert Leo Butts, 2-time Tony winner Donna Murphy, along with stage and screen star Josh Radnor, who's currently in the Babylon Line off-Broadway. You also have Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and joining the second season are Tony winner Patina Miller and Bryce, of course. It's a great show. I loved the first season. It's only 6 episodes, so I highly recommend that you binge watch those 6 episodes before January 22nd so you can catch up right there. Our conversation starts mid-sentence, mainly because I didn't hit the record button as soon as my phone rang, so that's why the beginning's a little bit wonky. Sorry about that. All right, here's our interview, and enjoy Holiday Inn tonight from Broadway HD. The announcement today that you're going to go out to Chicago and do My Fair Lady, right? That happened today.
That did happen today,
okay.
Yep.
I knew I wasn't completely off base on there was something going on today. So congratulations on that. That seems like a lot of fun, reuniting with Lisa O'Hare.
Yeah. That's pretty much the reason I want to do it is to see her play that role. I think she's going to be fantastic. And I know the way Lisa approaches a role, and I know she'll put every ounce of her artistry into that, and I'm just glad I get to be a part of it, to be there to witness it, and also never performed on an opera stage before, so that opportunity felt like, well, maybe a once in a lifetime for me, so it was an easy yes, and it's also, you know, I think it's a 2-month gig, so I'm only away from home for a little bit.
Very cool. Well, that actually kind of leads me into some stuff that I wanted to talk about. You said you didn't know if it was going to be the only time you get an opportunity to perform in an opera stage, but it seems like you're just doing a bunch of really different stuff. You, with the Heidi Chronicles last year, doing the Straight Show, then you're back on Broadway in Holiday Inn, but in the middle, you've got Mercy Street, and you've guest starred on all these TV shows. You were in The Get Down, you did The Comedian. It just seems like you're taking a lot of different opportunities and a lot of different, not only mediums, but also different types of projects as well. Is that just the kind of the traditional actor takes what gets offered, or are you purposely trying to keep things as varied as humanly possible?
No, I'm pretty intentional with what I choose to do. You know, I'd like for your readers to believe that I have tons of choices, and then I'm just choosing from a giant buffet of amazing options. That, however, is not the case. but I do try to put out extra effort for things that I know are different, or, you know, would take me in a different direction, or let people see something they haven't seen from me. For example, after doing Gentleman's Guide, I said, okay, the next thing I want to do is a play. And then Heidi Chronicles came up, and that felt like a good enough reason to take a hiatus from Gentleman's Guide to do a play. And then when I came back and closed Gentleman's Guide, I said, all right, the next 3 things I do are going to be on camera, because I really want to make sure that that world remains open to me. And having done 8 shows a week of a musical in a lead role for 2 years, I knew that I was going to need to give my body a break from that. And I also know that I can't imagine doing that for the entirety of my career. So I wanted to, you know, keep some other options open, and those include television and film. So I said, all right, the next three things I'm going to do are on-camera stuff. And so you named them Mercy Street, The Get Down, and The Comedian with Robert De Niro. And then sort of in the middle of all that, the offer to do Holiday Inn came in. And I sort of said, okay, well, I said I was going to do three things. I did my three things, and now I can go back and do another musical. So, you know, it's kind of, I'm always trying to weigh the decision on a couple different fronts. There's a great quote somebody said somewhere along the line, some actor who's done very well for himself, said something like, don't follow the money, follow the parts, and the money will follow you. And that's like, again, like, I would love your readers to think that I have that that capability. But sometimes, you know, you have to make a livelihood. And I know that I would rather work as an actor than not work as an actor. So some things are pure business decisions. And then other things, you see a part that you really want to play, like this part on Mercy Street. And I was rehearsing 1776 at Encores.
Right.
When I got this audition for Mercy Street, and I'll never forget, when I should have been learning lines for 1776, I was backstage learning lines for this Mercy Street audition, because I knew that it would be a challenge that I was up for and really, really wanted to take on. So I spent a ton of time on that audition, which, you know, actors do things differently. Some people spend too much time and they don't give their best audition. But for me and this character, the audition was basically a monologue, and I wanted to give a performance rather than a stab. So that was a long way of talking about a simple question, but one thing you'll discover about me is that I like to talk.
I guess you're in the right profession for that then.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Mercy Street, since that's kind of what we're on the phone to talk about. I loved the first season, and one of the things that I really enjoyed about the first season is how it kind of blended the historical with the personal. And with your character, Clayton McBurney III, we see him from the descriptions that we've heard of him and the little sneak peeks. I've seen some of the stuff from the first episode. He's a guy who has a lot of the historical stuff that goes along with it, having been in war. But he seems like he has a lot of very modern nuances with him, that it seems that he's dealing with things like PTSD that they probably didn't even have any idea how to even talk about that back during the Civil War. So this seems, it makes sense based off how excited you were about this character when we start to learn a little bit more about him. What actually went into kind of balancing that historical side and trying to make that as true and authentic as possible, but also trying to, you know, take into account all that we've learned about some of the things that he might be dealing with from a more modern medical sense?
Oh, it's a wonderful question. I think it's a really interesting position to be in as an actor, to know something about your character that your character doesn't know, or the people in his world don't know, or at least don't know how to talk about or categorize. And I have spent a number of time with this is a tangent, but I promise we'll come back to your, it relates to the answer in a big way. I spent a lot of time with a theater company called Outside the Wire. Mm-hmm. And they do trips to different military audiences across the world. And their sort of flagship program is a 30-minute performance of an excerpt from Sophocles' Ajax. It's used as a sort of pep rally for a town hall discussion about soldier suicide and PTSD. So I've listened to a lot of military audiences talk about soldier suicide and PTSD from a modern perspective. And it's something we're still learning how to wrap our heads around, learning how to detach a stigma that's been associated with it. You know, and you'll hear veterans from different eras stand up and call it something else. In World War II, they would just call it shell-shocked. And, you know, Vietnam vets would say, oh, he's got the fog of war. And I think for Clayton McBurney and his contemporaries, they certainly didn't have a name for it that I'm aware of. But they, you know, it's undeniable that traumatic events were taking place in front of young men on both sides of this army, and a lot of that repercussion, mental and emotional repercussion, was visited at the hospital. And so you're right, the character, from my perspective, definitely has some PTSD. And he's not even a soldier. He's really more of a, he's more of an academic. He went to Princeton to study to be a doctor, and then found himself in charge of sort of some in-field implementation of a hospital. And while he's there, he has a sort of near-death experience. And one of the things I've heard a lot of military people say is, unless you are on the field of battle, you kind of don't get to say, oh, I have PTSD, or, you know, I was injured in the war, because you weren't injured on enemy lines. So, you know, it can be hard for those people to stand up and say, I'm hurt, I need help. I was installing, you know, barracks or whatever, but I heard the bombs too, and I saw the blood and the guts, and like, I'm traumatized from that. So, it's interesting. I hope that, you know, I don't think McBurney's sole purpose on the show is to bring up, PTSD, but it's certainly there. And we get to watch, how he kind of unravels over the course of season two, and how those around him suffer because he's in a position of power, mostly in a comic way, but in serious ways too, suffer from the debilitation he's been confronted with.
Yeah. Some of the descriptions that we hear about him is, in addition to all that, the PTSD stuff that I mentioned, but they also define him as wildly quirky, which I think is really interesting for a, you know, medical / military period piece. You don't see a lot of characters that often get described like that. And I've seen some of the things you've said talking about how he seemed like he might be a little bit obsessed with things. So can you give us a little bit, just kind of look into who this guy is as a person, let alone as a doctor or, you know, a military man or something like that?
Yeah, I think wildly quirky is really useful. You know, one of the co-creators described him to me in our first day of rehearsal as an iron fist in a velvet glove. You know, he arrives with a giant feather in his hat, and he's very meticulous in all his uniform. And, you know, he has sort of a verbal flair that I would say is really an overcompensation for the emotional shortcomings that he brings to the hospital. Again, he's very young for the position he holds, or the position he's inherited. And I think, truth be told, his superiors sent him to the hospital to kind of get him off the battlefield. And I think he secretly really wants to go back there. Actually, not so secretly. He states his intent is to get back to the battlefield, which is something you'll hear a lot of soldiers with PTSD will talk about, really wanting to go back. But your question was about quirks. Yeah, he has, again, a certain verbal flair, sort of performative nature to him. I think he has this obsession with, I've forgotten the name, it's been so long, I know it's called phrenology.
Okay.
Phrenology was this study of different parts of the brain. And, you know, some hocus pocus thing that at this exact moment in history, there's a scene in which, in the second season, in which I say the words to Mary Finney, played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Mm-hmm. I will now feel your brain. And it's sort of in my interview of the head nurse, I stand behind her and put my fingers in her hair and start feeling her brain as if by telling the shape and size of it, I could somehow glean some greater information about her as an employee. So, you know, stuff like that. And he gets really obsessed with objects. And, you know, we sort of start to see that he's working with some severe OCD. which may or may not be caused by whatever, you know, triggers are going off in his brain. But, you know, I say all this in a, sounds maybe, I don't know what it sounds like, but having seen the second season, I think the result is mostly the one they were looking for, when I think they created this character, was some humor. I think most of it's pretty quirky and fun and, provides a little comic touch to a show that, you know, otherwise there's a lot of blood and guts and a lot of, you know, a lot of death. So I think part of the reason I was so excited to play him is that it's a really cool mix of comedy, but with a serious underbelly.
Yeah, as I said, I love the first season because it did have a lot of different influences going on with it. But another thing that I loved about it was all of the different talents that were brought into it. You have a huge amount of fantastic theater talent, but also people that come more from a TV world, and then some newcomers as well. And I got to talk with a number of people from the cast in the first season. But can you just kind of talk about your experience working with this group of people? And obviously, in the first season, a lot of it's segmented by who's in the hospital, who's at the house, and all this stuff. But so I'm not exactly sure who you got to work a lot with, but it really is just one fantastic cast. And it sounds like we're all shooting in Virginia, so whether or not maybe you worked with them directly, I assume that they were at least around in one way or another.
Absolutely. I mean, what drew me to the project, and again, it's not like I was picking from numerous projects, but right. What got me so excited about that I had an audition for the show was knowing that they had cast a number of theater actors, Broadway people in the past, or, you know, people like Josh Radner, who, you know, came from theater before he blew up on TV. So I knew that there was a sort of family feel to the fact that Norbert Leo Butz, Donna Murphy, Patina Miller, Brian O'Byrne, like I said, Josh, there's just a number of Broadway people on there, and so Reg Rogers, and so you're right. When we got down there, it was like it was like Broadway in Richmond. We had a lot of time off together, and you know, I think any good cast stems the sort of energy of the cast stems from the top down, and Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Josh Radner really led that community feel. Everybody was invited to every meal. We all stayed in the same hotel, and there was a courtyard where we all hung out. So it really kind of took on this beautiful 3 month kind of summer camp feel to it. And most of my scenes were with people in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So I had scenes with Norbert, and I had scenes with Josh and Mary. And then a lot of scenes with Tara Summers, who plays Miss Hastings, mm-hmm. who happens to be not only one of my favorite actresses on the show, but one of my favorite parts. and I think she and I just hit it off like gangbusters and had a really, really wonderful time working together. And I think I was so grateful that my scenes were across from her, because I was able to simultaneously learn from her and not be intimidated by her as I might have been from some of the other actors early on before I knew them. So I got really lucky, to be honest with you. And, you know, we kept joking about like Mercy Street has to do a Broadway musical parody, because there's so many of us down there.
Yeah.
And even a series regular from the first season, Wade Williams was, mm-hmm. was on Broadway a number of years ago. Of course, Peter Garrity, you know, was a stage actor.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Cole. Yes. Gary Cole. I mean, the list goes on. So it was a really great group, and I wish we had like recorded a Mercy Street album or something. maybe if there's a season 3, I'll get them to do a musical episode.
If nothing else, I would imagine that the karaoke bars in Virginia would appreciate a show or something as well.
Oh, trust me. We definitely got our sing along going. and that courtyard, Courtyard got some free concerts that were pretty great.
That's awesome. Well, I, like I said, I don't want to take too much of your time, but another thing that was announced today that I wanted to talk about in addition to the My Fair Lady thing, which it seems like today's a bunch of announcements for you, was that Holiday Inn is going to be doing the live stream coming up in January. Obviously, mm-hmm. The show, I'm sure, will, you know, that'll impact your performance on stage a little bit, but, you know, it's a show you've been doing for a few months now. You've got all this, but I would imagine that there's still a little bit of I don't know if nerves is probably isn't the word, but this is a different thing than doing the show, you know, 8 nights a week. You've got cameras there. I'm sure there'll be some other things going on, and I'm, you know, hopefully, like they did with She Loves Me, maybe this will eventually show up in movie theaters as well, but as you guys found out that this was going to happen and it's just, you know, going to be a couple weeks from now, do you approach that performance differently than you think you, than you have when the, you know, it's just a normal Tuesday night show on Broadway?
It's a great question. I guess the answer is I don't know just because I've never done it. My guess is that no, that we will, you know, at least for me, I'm sure that I will, not be able to treat it like another performance, because that would be trying to pull the wool over my own eyes. I know there's 10, I'll know that there's 10 cameras out there, and that I would want to give the best show possible. And I'll also, they do come in a few days before and do some, a dry run. They even record some stuff, the two nights before. So we'll have a little sort of feeling of what it's like. And mostly I'm just excited that, my grandparents, who are too old to travel to New York, will get to see me perform. I think that's so great. Cool. And you know, I think that's the success of this live streaming thing, is that it allows people who can't come to Broadway for whatever reason, to be with us for a night. That's really special. You know, do I have reservations about what it means for, live theater, and do I think live theater should be taped? I don't know. The jury's still out on that one. But I'm excited that we get to at least move the conversation forward and to be a part of this thing that's so new and exciting. And I'm looking forward to learning from the experience myself.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that agree with you that it's one of those conversations that needs to be had, but it definitely makes it a little more logical to do it with a show like Holiday Inn, which is a limited run that, you know, just a few weeks or a few days after, you know, the live stream, they're not going to have the chance to see it on stage, at least not in that incarnation. So I think this is a definitely an interesting thing that hopefully they get it figured out. But real quick, obviously you guys started Holiday Inn back, and I guess was the first performances in September. We're getting now to the point where it is the holiday season. Is there a different kind of feel to doing this show specifically during the holidays than maybe you had when you were, you know, walking around New York in shorts and a t-shirt when the previews first started?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I think if you did this show year round, the great thing about the show is, like, if you did it year round, right, you'd find a reason to be excited about it at any point of the year. Mm-hmm. When it was, you know, when we were wearing shorts and singing in Bryant Park, I got to sing Blue Skies to clear blue mm-hmm. skies in a t-shirt, you know, mm-hmm. so that was pretty great. But I will admit to you that, yeah, singing White Christmas in September is a little odd. and so now getting to sing it in December, in fact, dreaming of a White Christmas, as many in the audience no doubt are, is pretty special. And part of the reason I took the job as well is to be here at this time of year doing this material. And, you know, it's a movie that I'm discovering a lot of families have a holiday tradition built around in a similar way. A certain generation sat down and watched White Christmas every year. I think a lot of people that same generation sat down and watched Holiday Inn, and we are meeting a lot of them who are bringing their kids to see the show to kind of introduce them to the story and our updated version. Audiences definitely feel like they know why they're there. We know why they're there, and everybody just wants to, like, can't wait to see the Christmas tree and the, you know, the snow falling behind the window. But we also take them all the way through the year with Easter mm-hmm. parade and 4th of July. So But there is a, I will say, there is a sort of festive, definitely holiday spirit out at Studio 54 that we feed off of every night, having done the show for several months now. We have experienced an influx of energy, definitely.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know you these days are always busy when you've got a bunch of stuff to do before an evening show, and I really appreciate it. And congratulations on everything, both on stage and screen, and out of town now, too, when you're heading to Chicago. And I'm really looking forward to seeing season two of Mercy Street.
Matt, thanks so much for your time and for your interest in Mercy Street. I think it's a little special little show that could really use some love. So thanks so much, and for taking the Broadway angle on it, too. I think it's important that our Broadway fans know that, there's a pretty great Broadway cadre of Broadway performers on the show. So that means a lot to me. Thank you.
No, I appreciate it, and have a good show tonight.
All right, man.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this special interview episode of Broadway Radio. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt, that's M-A-T-T. You can also subscribe to Sound Like It Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Don't forget to listen to This Week on Broadway, where Peter Felicia, Michael Portantier, and James Marino will look back at the shows that they've seen in the past week, and they will be interviewing the fantastic Tony winner LaShawn's on tomorrow's episode. And then James and I will be back on Monday for Today on Broadway. The article born from this interview will come up on Broadway World later this week in anticipation of the January 22nd premiere of Mercy Street, so make sure to follow me on Twitter so you know exactly when it comes out. All right, thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.